Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's April 10th, 32 degrees and sunshine here in Old Town Park City. On the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Thomas Gieboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Wednesday to you. We're halfway through the week, and as we go through the next couple of days, we're going to be cranking up our spring feeling, and we're going to get treated to some lovely weather throughout the Wasatch back as we close out the work week. Today, we'll bring mostly sunny skies with a daytime high that's going to be very close to where we should be for this time of year. We'll see a daytime high of 49 in Park City while we sneak into the middle 50s down in the Heber Valley, and there will be a light northwesterly wind anywhere from 5 to 10 miles per hour with the occasional gust upwards of 15 miles per hour. Then tonight, it's mostly clear skies, the overnight low falling to around 30 degrees in Park City, and we'll drop into the upper 20s in Heber. And then for our Thursday and Friday, as we start to see more of a southerly flow compared to the northwesterly flow that we have right now, our temperatures will take a nice jump with each day being just that little bit warmer than the last. Tomorrow, we'll get into the mid and upper 50s in Park City, while Heber will likely see a daytime high in the low 60s. But that's going to be some beautiful weather, and I think with relatively calm winds and mostly sunny skies, tomorrow might actually be the nicest day of the week. And then on Thursday night, we'll drop to a low of 37 in Park City, mostly clear. And even though Friday is going to be likely the warmest day of this week, it will likely come with a little bit more cloud coverage and also some increasing winds with those winds out of the south. But again, a daytime high of 64 degrees. That's going to be a full on spring feeling across the Wasatch back. We'll drop to 39 degrees on Friday night, partly cloudy skies. And then Saturday continues with the spring feeling with mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies. And the daytime high will just be a fraction cooler compared to what we see on Friday as our high pressure starts to slowly move out of the way to the east. On Saturday night, mostly clear, overnight low of 38. And then our weather pattern will start to become unsettled as we round out the weekend and move into next week. So at this point, with the high pressure moving out of the way between Friday and Saturday, a low pressure will start to approach from the west. Still uncertain about the timing of this, but it looks like the chance of wet weather will increase as we go from Sunday into Monday. As our temperatures will continue on a downward trend, we'll only see a daytime high of 55 degrees on Sunday, and we'll drop to 34 degrees on Sunday night. Then on Monday, a chance of rain and snow showers, a daytime high of 51. However, as this storm system on Sunday into Monday begins to clear to the east, looks like we'll see another system drop in from the northwest, and this will likely bring us a better chance for showers based on what I'm seeing in the forecast models and even cooler temperatures. And that's going to result in our temperatures dropping back down to the middle 40s for highs by our Tuesday. And we could see unsettled weather hanging around through, I'd say, the bulk of next week before we could begin to warm back up as we approach next weekend. But at the end of the day, we're going to see some beautiful weather over the next 72 hours, maybe even through our Saturday as well, before our weather becomes more unsettled and cooler as we move into next week, Leslie.
Okay, Thomas, thank you.
You're welcome.
And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we've got Nikki. Good morning.
Good morning. So like you just said, we've got a beautiful day in the mountains, warm temperatures and sunny skies. Winds did pick up a little bit, so we're going to want to pay attention to that. But overall, we've got excellent coverage and excellent riding, so it's a good time to get out there and get after it. Today, the snowpack is generally stable, and the avalanche danger is overall low this morning. With normal caution advised, there's two main concerns. Those are isolated pockets of wind-drifted snow in the upper elevation terrain and wet snow on the steep solaries. Most of the drifting will be on the north to east to south facing aspects, but cross-loading may drift snow onto any aspect, so that's why you want to pay attention at all upper elevations. These soft slabs should be easy to recognize this morning. You want to avoid any slopes with obvious signs of wind-drifted snow. And then throughout the day, as the winds decrease, the strong sun may cause avalanche danger to rise at all elevations facing east to south to west. In these areas, it could become possible for humans to trigger wet, loose snow avalanches. So just remember that low danger does not mean no danger, but it's a good time to get out there.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with Summit County Sheriff Frank Smith, along with Chief Deputy Casey Bates. Later on, Park City Manager Matt Dias previewing this week's City Council meeting. That includes a transportation visioning session for State Route 248. And finally, Heber Valley Chamber Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner with a look ahead at some of those events happening in the Heber Valley. Then stay tuned for the Mountain Life. Today's guests include leading nutrition researcher and New York Times bestselling author Dr. Neil Bernard about his new book, The Power Foods Diet, the breakthrough plan that traps, tames, and burns calories for easy and permanent weight loss. Then local chiropractor Dr. Jake Shores of Neuroperformance Integration talks about chiropractic biophysics used to correct undiagnosed spinal abnormalities linked to pain, migraines, fatigue, and more. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life. Of course, you can hear The Mountain Life every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10. Well, taking a look at some local news, it'll be another 6 weeks before any decisions are made in a lawsuit over the Heber Valley Temple. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has the latest.
Judge Jennifer Mabee of the 4th District Court heard arguments from three attorneys Tuesday about a lawsuit over development plans for the Heber Valley Temple. She said no decisions will be made in the case until late May. First, some background. The Wasatch County Council approved plans November 8th for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to build a temple on an 18-acre site on Center Street, just outside the Heber city limits. The temple is expected to be 88,000 square feet and will reach 200 feet at its tallest point. A group of citizens from Red Ledges, the neighborhood across the street from the site of the future Heber Valley Temple, filed a lawsuit shortly afterward, arguing it was illegal for the county to approve a legislative development agreement rather than ask the church to apply for a conditional use permit. The land use dispute came up in court Tuesday afternoon for two key decisions, a motion to intervene and a motion to dismiss. The church made a motion to join the case as a defendant in January. During Tuesday's hearing, an attorney representing the church, Tanner Camp, told maybe the church wants to represent its own interests in the case rather than leaving it in the county's hands.
Just because the interests right now are currently in line, it does not mean that they're coextensive.
As far as the motion to dismiss, Deputy County Attorney John Woodard argued the county council's process was sufficient and the residents' complaints are groundless.
Taking it through public process, public hearings, public meetings. We've done exactly what the legislature asked us to do in making a legislative development agreement approval. So I would encourage the court to not get into the controversial issues by finding that there is not standing in this case and avoiding the political disputes.
But Robert Mansfield, the attorney for the Red Ledges residents, told the judge the question was whether the county broke the law in approving the development agreement.
The cases are numerous where courts have reviewed whether a political body has or has not followed the law in granting its various approvals, regardless of how controversial the topic may or may not be. But that is exactly the type of issue that a judicial body should review and not leave to the political process.
After all the attorneys had made their arguments and answered Mabee's questions, she declined to make immediate decisions about either motion.
I don't believe I can rule from the bench on these motions. I do need to take some time to consider the arguments as well as, you know, the notes that I've taken today on the motion to dismiss, which necessarily then impacts the motion to intervene.
Mabee plans to issue an oral ruling for both motions on May 23rd at 2 p.m. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Sheriff's Office, I have Sheriff Frank Smith along with Chief Deputy Casey Bates. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
Frank, let's start first with the letter that some residents may have received in the mail from you and the Utah Sheriff's Association, basically asking for money. Is it legit?
It is legit. It's a Sheriff's Association's annual fundraiser. The money goes to the Sheriff's Association, and all the sheriffs involved in the association, which is every sheriff in Utah, participates in that fundraiser. The money goes to fight legislation that we think as sheriffs, you know, wouldn't benefit the communities. So it is legit. I was surprised I got one. I used to get them with Justin's name on them. Now it's mine. And I got several calls about it, but it is legitimate.
Okay. A donation of $20, what does that get you? Free get out of jail card?
Not for me. what it does is it does help the Sheriff's Association to go fight that legislation that we think wouldn't benefit our communities. So the money goes directly to the Sheriff's Association, benefits the Sheriff's Association, but it doesn't benefit Summit County Sheriff's Office, directly. It benefits us through our association with the Sheriff's Association.
Yeah, I think you do get a sticker to put on your car. Does that help?
Not with me. but we appreciate the donation, and the Sheriff's Association certainly will continue to fight those legislations if you donate or not.
All right. Let's see. Also coming up, you've got a fundraiser for the search and rescue team.
Yeah,
Casey, you're going to take that?
Yeah, I can take that. Our friends of Summit County Search and Rescue are putting on a fundraiser. They are huge supporters of our search and rescue. And this fundraiser is going to help with training that's critical, equipment that's critical. It helps our volunteers perform rescue safely and efficiently. Some of the numbers that I want to mention are from our 2023 year. We had 112 events, which average about one event every 3 days. We had over 2,000 response hours, and 1,500 of those were volunteer. Calls of service were the highest in January and August. And what I found interesting was 6% of those responses were people that actually live in Summit County. The rest, 24%, were individuals that live out of state, and 70% live in Utah but not in Summit County of those responses. So this fundraiser helps respond to those incidents, and it's at the DeJoria Center. It's on May 4th, 6:30 to 7:30 or 9:30, I believe. Mm-hmm. Josh Kelly, Dustin Christensen are going to be there. It's going to be a great event. So more information, we've actually posted it on our social media site. You can also go to friendsofsar.org to get more information. And I believe the DeJoria also has it on their website as well.
Okay. How much are tickets?
You know, it is, I looked at it, and I'm not sure now to be specific. I know that you can get a booth. They're doing tables. They're doing quite a few things, different things. Go on the website, click on it. You can get more information about that.
All right. Let's see. So is it basically a concert?
It is a concert.
It is any more than that? I mean,
as far as I know, it's a concert. You're going to see Josh Kelly, Dustin Christensen perform, and as far as I know, it's a concert.
Okay. Let's see. What's the status of counterfeit bills? I mean, we have done a report on this earlier. Have you found out where they're coming from?
Well, we just happened to make an arrest yesterday. One of our deputies was doing his due diligence out, you know, doing traffic enforcement, stopped a car in Colville, and there was washed bills. They'll take a one or a five, bleach the bill, and then they'll print 100 on it. And after doing that, then they'll pass the bill, usually in a convenience store or a gas station. We've got the printing press, the wash bills, and an admission from the subjects. Can't talk too much about it because it's an ongoing case, but we do have people in custody that we believe were the perpetrators of the majority of that counterfeit money.
So, county residents?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay.
I know that they were transient, passing through. I don't know if they're originally from here or not. But it was a really interesting case. And we had a number of people who have come forward, and a lot of counterfeit bills have been passed. So we feel that this will really benefit the community, having these people in custody.
Yeah, and I guess, how obvious are they?
You know, it's funny. I think if a Secret Service agent who's responsible for counterfeit looked at it, maybe it's more obvious. But when I looked at them, they looked like they were legitimate bills. And if you took that ink pen that turns black, they would have passed because they were using $1 and $5 legitimate currency to make the hundreds. So I thought that it was actually a very good counterfeit bill, but I'm not an expert on it. But The ones I saw, I would have taken.
Yeah, okay, so that again, it feels like money, looks
feels like money.
Money,
looks like money,
yeah.
You assume it's money.
Yeah.
And especially if I just got a tank of gas, that was $60, and a couple snacks, you know, and all of a sudden that 100's really 25 coming back, I don't think you're as diligent as looking at it if I bought a pack of gum.
Right. So any idea how much in counterfeit money was transferred? Or
you know, the individuals were cooperating. I didn't read the statements that they made yet. It just happened yesterday. I think we'll have a better idea of that next time we come on your show. But they did readily admit, and it's hard not to admit it when your printing press is in your back seat, but they did readily admit that they were passing counterfeit money.
All right. And how many people were arrested then?
Two.
Hmm. Are there more, or you don't know that?
We don't know that yet. And like I said, it's an ongoing investigation. We got to be careful. We don't want to create discovery issues. But there are two people in custody.
Yeah. What were they pulled over for?
A traffic violation.
Okay, that's usually if you're going to break, right?
All crimes end up back on the highway or the road. So if we're out there doing our job, you know, you create your own luck.
Only break one law at a time.
Right. Right. That should be your first rule.
Yeah. One of the things I do want to mention, Leslie, is there is one thing that they're not able to duplicate, and it's when you are turning the bill, there's a translucent color in the bottom corner that when you turn the bill, it changes if you look at these bills. And another thing is become educated. Like, make sure the business owners, as I talked before, make sure your business owners, they know how to detect and provide training for your employees to detect these things, because they are good and they are doing things that make it a little bit more difficult. And so just be diligent in training and maybe being aware of those little things that they aren't able to duplicate. And of course, if a business has had a counterfeit bill, please contact the sheriff's office and let us know, because there could be cases out there that we don't know about yet with the arrest happening yesterday. So if you have had an incident, please contact our communication center, and we'll get you to the case agent.
Yeah, and what if I happen just to have one of these in my possession, right? Not knowing, right? Use it. Am I in trouble?
You're not. We know that you're not the counterfeiter, but you will have lost that money, because we will seize it, and you may be out $100 or $500. We are looking for the perpetrators. We're not looking for the person that accepted a bad bill. Ironically, I was talking to one of the business owners yesterday, and he was telling me one of the hundreds they accept was actually a five, because they could see on that red translucent that it was actually a $5. But it takes close examination. You have seven people in line. That clerk, in all likelihood, is not going to examine every bill. You know, they just want to get that crowd moving through. An interesting segue to that, you know, it seems like recently we've been hit with more scams than ever before. And we're progressively going out trying to educate the public. And the chief has led a group of our deputies. We're going to start going into, you know, our elderly care homes, things of that nature, where it seems like they're a little more susceptible to some of these scams. If anyone ever calls you and says that law enforcement has an arrest warrant for you and pay us an iTunes cards, that's an indication. So we're going to go out and aggressively go talk to our people that we feel are more susceptible to these scams and explain to them, don't call. Here's our phone number. Call us first. Do not give them any money. And try and get on the, you know, on the upside of this.
Yeah. And again, for those businesses that did receive counterfeit dollars, again, they're out the money. There's no repercussion or anything, huh?
They're out the money.
Mm.
You know, they could bring civil action against, you know, these individuals, these perpetrators, but they're going to have nothing.
Okay. Then in terms of that, moving on with that senior citizens fraud, again, you're going to just, what, go to senior centers?
We are. That's exactly what we're doing. We're going to contact all of our senior citizen centers within the county, and we are going to have, we have a couple of investigators that are there to answer questions, that are there to educate our seniors on specifically what is happening, specifically the things that we're seeing that are getting reported. For instance, we've had them pretend to be their grandchildren. They have this information. They are able to get information very quickly. We had a victim recently that they made it so that they stayed on the phone for a very long time. And they make it urgent that people have to respond and react. And we're going to teach them all of those things that this caller will do, and that you can hang up, you can verify, you can call the sheriff's office, you can do everything. Do not let them keep you on the phone and make you afraid and that something's going to happen if you don't do that. We would never do that. We're not there to do that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to educate, and we're going to talk about the things that we're seeing and that are reported to us that they're doing, and hopefully make it so that this can, we can minimize these cases that are happening within our county. And we also want to do this throughout the public. It's not just our seniors that are victims. We've seen young people that are victims. And so we really want to reach out and branch out and educate everybody about these frauds, because these people are, they're just relentless in what they do, and we want to stop it.
Yeah.
And one interesting thing, just to capitalize on what Kathy was saying, they will spoof our number. Mm-hmm. So you may look at your caller ID, and it will show the sheriff's office number. If that happens, that helps convince these people, hang up and call us, because it's not going to call back to them, it's going to call back to us. So if you just see it's the sheriff's office number or the IRS's number, it's usually not. It's just spoofed. So they got to really be careful with that.
Yeah, IRS only through mail.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
And any idea number of fraud cases we're talking about?
I haven't looked that up, but I can get you the numbers for sure.
All right, moving on, the Citizens Academy. I know this is something Park City Police does. The Sheriff's Office does it as well?
We do, and we did it last year. It was a huge success, and we are doing it again, and we've announced it on our social media site. If anyone is interested, we would ask them to email to citizensacademy@summitcounty.org. Sergeant Skylar Talbot is heading this again, and he's been amazing at getting this going again. It's going to be it's going to begin on June 4th. It's going to be every Tuesday with the exception of June 2nd. We're going to take that night off, but it's 10 Tuesdays, with August 6th being graduation. Tuesday evenings from 6 to 9. And we're asking the people that are expressing interest through the emails that they dedicate the Tuesdays to do this. We've had a lot of interest, and we need to have people that are willing to take a Tuesday night from 6 to 9 to learn this, because we have to deny quite a few people, because this has become very popular to take, which we love, and it's going to involve real life scenarios, using simulators, firearms training, traffic stops, search and rescue, our mounted posse, demonstrations. We have our crime scene investigations. They're going to learn about corrections. Every facet of the sheriff's office will encompass this 10 nights that they're going to be there. And so a lot of work has been put into it by Sergeant Talbot, and we appreciate that. And he's super excited for it to start. And again, it starts on June 4th. So if you're interested, turn in your applications. You can go online to see what you need to put in there. It's just a letter of interest. And we're excited to have it happen.
Okay, and then finally, House Bill 84. This provided for school resource officers. I know we do have some already,
yes.
But it's going to ensure that there is one resource officer for every school, or what does the bill do?
Well, what the bill does, it doesn't spell out resource officer. It has the language guardian, security guard, or resource officer. We've partnered with the school districts in Summit County, especially, you know, the three school districts have resource officers in every school. District. This bill, we would hope, would put a deputy in every school. It's ironic. If you walk into a bank, you see an armed guard to guard our money. But we walk into a school, and you know there's usually not even a bulletproof window. So this gives us the opportunity as law enforcement to start interacting with children at a very young level and maybe take some of the fear out of telling us things, and you know, participating with the sheriff's office will be removed, you know, at a young age. So we see it as a benefit. And you know, the things that make me walk the floor at night as sheriff, this is one of them. I worry about our schools. I worry about our places of worship. This just gives us another tool to help prevent any carnage that could happen at these schools.
Yeah, so who pays for the deputies? The sheriff's office or the school district?
The school district now is supposed to pay for them. We're gonna meet with our council. The way it is now, we partner with some of the schools and the deputy. They pay for part of it, we pay for part of it. We think that's a fair model. We think that's a model everyone's invested, and if everyone's invested, it'll be a success. So that's what we're gonna push for, but it's ultimately up to the council and the school district. But our preference is a deputy in every school. That's a partnership.
Okay, and was that funded by the state legislature?
Of course, it's an unfunded mandate.
Oh.
There's money allocated. Yeah. The big piece of this is there's going to require a security chief in the county that oversees all the schools that works for the sheriff's office. So we're going to have an FTE for that position. It'll be at a very high level because they have the ability not only to supervise, but to hire and fire. So that's one of the moving pieces that that we have to get worked out. But this is still in its infancy for us. Yeah. So there's a lot to come on this.
Yeah, well, it'd be nice if it was a deputy, but I think the bill allows somebody like myself to just go volunteer.
Right, which is concerning to me.
I would think so, but...
Right, it's concerning to me.
Okay, anything else you guys want to mention?
I would just like to mention some... Again, we've said it before. If you see something, say something. And if you have that happen and you see something, say something, please call our communications center with information. We can't do anything if you call me or you call the sheriff or you call the person you know that's a deputy. You need to call our communications center. They will get you the appropriate person. They will get you the right the deputy. They'll get you everybody that you need to have to respond in a timely manner. So I think that's important.
Okay, Casey, Sheriff Frank Smith, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leslie.
In the studio now with a preview of Thursday's Park City Council meeting, I have City Manager Matt Dias. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Leslie. Sorry, just sitting down here.
Yeah, so starting at 3:55 is a work session. The only item there is a State Route 248 visioning session. So what do you hope to get from the council during this hour-long discussion?
We put together a very comprehensive staff report. We did a lot of work on this really coming out of the council retreat where we received firm direction from the mayor and council to start working on some longer term sort of legacy initiatives in the community in preparation for, let's say, 2034, 10, 15 years out. And so Highway 248, State Route 248, is arguably our most congested corridor. It causes the most amount of consternation in the community. And the inputs that we get on it and the feedback are varied. We have a lot of feedback from the school district, from people in the Prospector neighborhood that are concerned about speeds and noise. And then we get a lot of concerns from business owners and visitors that they have trouble getting in and out of the community and the congestion. And so there are a lot of competing interests on this corridor. There is a long history. We put together a very comprehensive report. But what we're trying to get out of it is really an attempt over probably multiple meetings, because it's a study session, not a work session, is really to define sort of what problem are we trying to solve out there? Are we solving for the transit rider? Are we solving for the commuter? Are we working on bicycle and pedestrian amenities? Are we working on moving the faculty and students in and out of that corridor differently? And so really trying to define what problem we're trying to solve, and then reviewing what options and constraints the council might have in pursuing those, whether they're pursuing federal grants, whether they're pursuing a bus rapid transit system that's compatible to what's on 224, and then get some next steps on the direction that we're going to have to pursue over years. As you've seen with the work that the county has done on 248, I'm sorry, on 224, these projects take years of federal funding and analysis, and so we're getting that started again.
An earlier council back in 2019 did not want to widen 248 to four lanes throughout. So what's the thinking now that maybe we should look at that?
I would say everything's probably back on the table. I don't think we would disadvantage any alternative at this point. So we're starting with the study session, which is sort of a conceptual way to brainstorm and workshop in the back of the room. It's less formal in that we're not seeking explicit direction to approve or deny a contract or an initiative. So I'd say everything's on the table. We want several of our new council members to be able to poke and prod past decisions, what we did or what we did not do and why. But you're right, we had several years ago, we had an opportunity to just widen the corridor. I think at the time it was contemplated cutting into the PC Hill, some sound barriers and other things. And it was just perceived at the time as sort of inconsistent with our community values. Although it would get people in and out of here faster, it was largely designed around the automobile because UDOT at that time really didn't have a nexus with public transportation. Now, there were a lot of proponents of that widening, and I don't want to minimize the improvement that it would be for the commuters that come in and out of this town every day, but there was a balance at the time that Summit County and Park City Municipal were trying to strike, and at that time we sort of declined a road widening project.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen in like New York City where people are just charged a toll. If you're not a resident, you know what? You're going to pay to come into town. And then, you know, bumping up parking fees as well. Is that on the agenda as well? I mean, just keeping people off the road, building something large where they would stop and then have to get on a bus?
I mean, I'd say it's all on the table. I don't think there's, you know, I think we're probably kidding ourselves if we think there's a single solution or a single silver bullet. However, there are likely multiple strategic initiatives that we could pursue on that roadway that would improve things for a variety of users. But again, I think to start, we're going to try to define what the problem is and maybe who or whom we're trying to solve for. Is it a commuter? Is it a pedestrian? Is it a student? Is it faculty? Is it an employee? And so we have all these competing interests on this corridor. Clearly a widening would get people in and out faster, but then there are the material impacts. And this corridor, there's some wetlands, there's a neighborhood, there's a school campus. And I wish it was easy. I wish this was a state highway that didn't have all of these additional impacts along the way. But so it's a sensitive corridor, but we know people are frustrated. And we'd like to start planning for the next 10, 15 years.
So do we have official BRT lanes? I mean, we had buses running on the shoulders this winter.
We do. And I guess I wouldn't call them official. We're calling those sort of express shoulder running lanes. And you know, last evening when I was leaving town on my way out through Kimball Junction, the bus, actually a school bus and High Valley Transit and a Park City Municipal bus all passed me on the shoulder on the right-hand side out. So the BRT is a whole other level of infrastructure that far exceeds just a shoulder running lane. So we have those currently on certain sections of 248. As everyone knows, we stood up the Richardson Flat Express. And we had incredible utilization, and so there's some proof positive there that if we provide fast and reliable transit service, particularly from locations outside of town, there are numerous types of users that are willing to use it.
Okay. Rocky Mountain Power Project overview. No staff report, so I'm not really sure what this is.
Sorry, it's in the presentation part of our agenda. And basically, we're going to be receiving a presentation from Rocky Mountain Power that will be briefing the council and community on some of their wildfire hardening efforts in town. And so due to state and federal legislation, Rocky Mountain Power is required to do a lot of wildfire hardening with some of the occurrences and emergencies and accidents that have happened, and particularly the Mountain West. But so the big utility in our state will be coming in, and they have several poles that they'll be replacing more or less from the substation here in the Bonanza area that runs all the way up to PCMR through town and then over to, let's say, directionally just the Daly Canyon, as people will know as the crow flies. And so there are a volume of old wooden poles. Some of them are listing, you know, left or right. They've been in place for a long time, and this is a requirement. And so Rocky Mountain Power will also be having an open house on Tuesday the 23rd. From 5 to 7 at the library. And they're gonna be mailing notifications to every property owner within 400 feet of one of these poles. They're gonna be going through the Old Town area and putting door hangers on people's doors at least 15 days prior to any construction. And to be fair, there may be some brief power outages as they work on this project over the summer, but really it's a wildfire hardening effort.
Okay. There's also a request to sign a construction agreement to repair the two bridges that are along the rail trail. We're talking almost $500,000 here. I mean, so this is more than just replacing wood planks. I mean, are we talking about some structural issues as well?
We are. We're actually talking about a full structural element, so an entirely new structural elements, steel and wood. And then there's material and infrastructure around them to secure them in place and make sure that in the event of wind, fire, flooding, and otherwise, that these things just don't float away or get damaged unnecessarily. I think the effort here is actually a wonderful collaboration between Summit County, the tourism economy, and the municipality, where the $488,000 for these two structures and the accoutrement to keep them in place, the cement ballast and other things, are all funded primarily through grants and not coming from the Park City taxpayer primarily. So this will happen. This is for fabrication and delivery and installation. So this will probably happen later this summer. We'll have some minor trail rerouting. There's a wag trail that sort of runs, I think that's what I call it, the wag trail that runs above the rail trail. And so we'll have rangers out there when the construction is going, we'll be able to route people around it. But our hope would be, you know, over time we've had a lot of these boards fail and some of the bridges have been shifting and listing. And so I think they've been in place for almost 50, maybe 40 years, and it's time to replenish them. And we're fortunate to secure grant funding to do that.
Okay. Speaking of listing, have you gotten a study update on the...
Not yet, not since I talked to you last week.
Okay. An interesting request from a former employee. What does the code require of former employees? I mean, and the recommendation is to grant him this exception.
Yeah, I think, you know, just to take a step back, I was, you know, looking at the code, and I think the last time we could figure that it was updated or amended was maybe around 2001, and so it was a long, long time ago. But primarily, our economic development director, Eric Danitz, recently left the municipality to pursue an opportunity at Zions Bank, working with cities and towns and special financing tools. And so for those individuals that have worked with Eric, has an incredible level of statistical and analytical abilities, high-level coding. And Eric's built some really valuable models for the municipality, statistical models, predictive models for sales tax, for traffic and congestion, for where visitors are coming from, an entire regression analysis that has to do with, you know, inputs are everything from the cost of a barrel of oil to landings and departures at the airports to the lodging numbers that we get from the chamber. And so we're able to use this information to actually allocate resources predictive about how many people are going to be in town, where we need police officers, when we're going to have to supplement with our parking department to channel traffic and do other things. Our social media team relies upon this information about how much proactive effort they're going to have to do. And so we would like to have some of Eric's services continue on, at least in the near term when we're recruiting his replacement. And so there is an element in our code that allows us to release former employees from post-employment restrictions. And I think the genesis of this was really to protect a city or town, in this case Park City. An employee would learn a lot about an initiative and then would somehow wield that initiative against the city or town or use that with the private sector in a way that would disadvantage the municipality. Now, this is the opposite. We're asking Eric to continue to provide some supplementary services when we're recruiting his replacement, not so much that he's going to be using this information against us. So out of an abundance of caution, we're being incredibly transparent. My 10 years here, we've never used this release. And you know, talking to some of the legacy employees in the organization, they can't recall a time we've ever used this either. But we just said, hey, let's err on the side of caution. Let's be incredibly transparent. And then I think we want people to know that Eric's still around. He's, you know, he's a Park City kid that went to Park City High School and moved on to wonderful things. He spent 4 years with us, and we're just doing this to be incredibly transparent.
All right. The capital budget preview and fee schedule. What are some of the big ticket items that we're looking at for the next year?
Well, I think, you know, primarily, you know, coming out of the council retreat, a few things. We, you know, pursuant to previous council direction, we really took a step back and attempted a zero-based budgeting exercise. So we took every single capital project that has either been contemplated or funded or partially funded over the last 5 years, really started everything at zero. That means we didn't give things a head start just because they were building a balance towards an outcome, which is very typical in most communities, that you can't fund everything year one and you'll start building a balance over multiple years. And we were able to close out a bunch of old projects that will also hold the balance for change orders and kind of project completion. So we were able to find and able to close out an additional $3 million that we can allocate back into the capital fund. So we did a zero-based budgeting exercise. And then some of the hallmarks are we obviously have a commitment with the public-private partnership that we did with Deer Valley, so we're fully recommending that we fully fund that. We are also maintaining our commitment to a senior center affordable housing public-private partnership. And maintaining that award, we are fully funding and adding funding for the new Mark Aquatics facility. We are also doing the same for the city park building. Just as inflation, you know, supplies, materials, labor increases, we're providing more funding to those projects as the cost estimates get hardened. And then we are adding some additional money for potentially undergrounding the transmission lines in the Bonanza District. We know that's been a priority of councils. So we have, you know, multiple exciting initiatives. Like most things in the world today, estimates from 2 or 3 years ago are sort of out of date, and as those estimates get hardened, we're applying money to retain and keep those commitments. But this is a preview. This is really coming in before we are required to submit a recommended budget and saying, hey, counselor, are we directionally correct? Do you want more or less over here? So we're going to have multiple conversations before we come in with the final budget.
Wanted to just real quickly mention there is kind of an open house to talk a little bit more about the PC Mark plans and the city recreation that's going to happen tonight with Mayor Nan Worrell and a couple council members.
There will, and this is going to be the first of a series, actually. You're going to see the recreation team. You know, the first one, they're starting at the Mark, obviously, you know, but with Mayor Nan Worrell, Council Member Parisian, and Council Member Ryan Dickey. But we're going to be popping these up around town in probably the next 45 to 60 days, so there's going to be a pop-up in City Park and a pop-up at the library. So there'll be multiple opportunities to get community input.
Okay. Wanted to ask you, this is off the agenda, but wanted to ask you with just a few minutes remaining here, the Deer Valley chairlift application before the Park City Planning Commission tonight. Tell me, why is this any different than what Park City Mountain had proposed for its upgrades to Eagle and Silver Lode lifts? I mean, the same codes involved. Both resort applications are asking for something that were not part of the original development agreement. So why wouldn't we see this end up where we saw the Park City Mountain lifts end up in court?
Fortunately, I caught up with the interview that you did with the planning director yesterday, and I don't know that I can actually answer this question any better than Planning Director Ward did. I found her explanation. So for the betterment of the public, I would also listen to her interview yesterday as the planning director. She answered this very succinctly, but I think the answer was, you know, Deer Valley is applying for a lift that is currently not included in their existing, let's call it their development agreement, their mountain plans and otherwise. And so because of that, they're seeking a full conditional use permit review before the planning commission. This is something that wasn't contemplated in previous plans. And because of that, they need to go directly to the planning commission. Conversely, when Park City Mountain came in, they were making an argument that the lifts requested complied with their mountain upgrade plan or their development agreements and their uphill agreements. And so because of that, they had the ability to request an administrative review, and they did that. Now, they could have gone the full conditional use permit, or they could have made the argument that this is consistent with plans and it can require an administrative review, and they made that argument. And so fundamentally, two different things here. Deer Valley is saying, this is inconsistent and these are our plans and we're coming in for a full conditional use permit and we think it makes sense for X, Y, and Z. The other group said, this is consistent with our mountain upgrade plan. It doesn't require a full CUP. Can you review it administratively? So sort of two different processes. And again, at a technical level, our planning director explains that much better than myself.
Okay, I got to leave it there. Matt, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Roadwork on Interstate 80 in Parley's Canyon starts this week. KPCW's Christine Weller reports that repair is expected to take place through May.
The Utah Department of Transportation will begin replacing a barrier on eastbound I-80 in Parley's Canyon Friday. UDOT's Kyler Sharp says the work is near Lambs Canyon at exit 137. Only the shoulder near the exit will be closed Friday. However, starting Saturday, the eastbound right lane will also close for about a mile up to exit 138. Sharp says the right lane will intermittently close through mid-May.
There will be no lane closure during peak travel hours, just kind of throughout the day as they do work. And that'll be from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday after this weekend for that right lane closure.
UDOT doesn't expect significant traffic impacts and asks residents to be cautious when they see crews working on roads.
We want to make sure that you get to where you're going safe, but we also want to get our workers home safe as well. So just drive with caution, be safe, and we appreciate the patience.
The barrier replacement is expected to end mid-May. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And on the phone now with an update from the Heber Valley Chamber, I have Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having us on this morning.
Yeah, so real quick, we should note that the executive director of the chamber is meeting this morning just to meet with, constituents, and you've got another one coming up in June.
Yes, we do them every other month on the second Wednesday at 8:30 at the Visitor Center. So, yeah, you're right. This morning is taking place currently, and then the next one will be June 12th at 8:30 a.m.
Okay. Also, you've got coming up this month the monthly chamber luncheon at the UVU Wasatch campus. This is an important topic. You've got UDOT as your guest. Tell us about this.
Yeah, important, timely, and touchy. We've got UDOT representatives coming in. They're going to be talking about the Highway 189 expansion, the particular section of 189 being right at the edge of Charleston as it wraps around Deer Creek and heads down toward Provo Canyon, where it goes from a two-lane to a one before it opens back up to a two-lane each direction. So that has been a hot topic here within Heber Valley and Wasatch County, particularly for those commuters and businesses that are located along that corridor. And then they'll also be talking and answering questions. We'll have a little Q&A opportunity at the end of their presentation to talk about the bypass and where they are in that decision-making process and next steps, as well as overall timeline for both of these projects. So really relevant to what's happening right now throughout the valley, considering residential and business growth, as well as what's coming up at that Mayflower exit with the Deer Valley East Village and some other developments happening throughout the valley that's going to bring increased vehicular traffic into and through the valley corridor.
So who's welcome to attend this? It's happening April 16th at noon.
Yes, it is. That will be anyone that is a chamber member and anyone within the community and surrounding areas. So we do have different price points depending on if you're a chamber member and if you RSVP in advance. It is open, though, to the entire community. So even if you're not a Heber Valley Chamber member, we still welcome you and invite you to attend any of our monthly luncheons. This one in particular might be of interest to those in the surrounding areas.
Yeah. All right. Coming up April 18th, you've got an after hours mixer, just an opportunity to network.
Sure do. So 2 days following that lunch from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, April 18th, Heber Valley Catering Company will be highlighted on that after hours mixer. They're going to be hosting in their new space. Excellent food, I can promise you that. Food and beverage will be great. And also networking opportunities. It's always a mixed bag on these after hours mixers. We end up with a variety of different attendees that represent business owners, business managers, key staff throughout the community, and even just some residents that are really interested in understanding what the business climate is throughout the valley. So these are excellent opportunities to mix and mingle, share some business cards or e-cards, and really kind of keep a finger on the pulse of what's going on.
All right. Registration, I know, is underway for the annual Wasatch Back Economic Summit. This is happening May 14th.
Yes, it is all but sold out. Oh, sorry. Yeah, and it is all but sold out. Just got confirmation yesterday. This is a partnership between Heber Valley Chamber, Heber City, Wasatch County, Summit County, Park City Municipal, and Park City Chamber. So Park City Chamber is graciously offered to handle all the registration and money taking for that. And I was informed yesterday that there are a handful of tickets left. We're sold out of full tables. So if you are looking for a seat, please do not wait. It will be happening on Tuesday, May 14th. It'll be at the Grand Summit Hotel over at Canyons Village. It will be from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. and it wraps with a regional mixer that ends at 5 p.m. We've got some very timely and important topics as well as crucial opportunities to gather input from the community as well as the attendees. The full schedule is on the websites of both the Heber Valley Chamber and the Park City Chamber. So click over to those to learn more and see which breakouts and speakers will be participating, and then absolutely get your tickets and don't wait.
Okay. It used to kind of transfer from Heber City to Park City. We just found out it's so popular, you need the biggest place you can find, huh?
You know, the last few years in particular have really gained in awareness as well as popularity. So we have had very, very quick ticket sales, if you will, or seat sales. It sold out almost instantly last year and this year, and that is something new for us. So we are now battling the challenge of do we grow this to allow additional seats, and if so, where does it go? And yet, you are correct. It typically does switch between counties year over year. Last year, it was at the Grand Summit. It was really successfully done there. So we collectively as a region decided to hold it there again this year, hoping that maybe a new venue will be coming online in time for next year's summit. And that might be situated, I mean, I'm speaking a little covertly, but that might be situated a little bit more friendly between the two communities at that kind of Mayflower exit. So we do not have that pinned down yet. We are working with the new hotel properties that will be opening up and some of the management teams that are still being hired on a local level to determine if it's feasible and if we can make that happen for next year. But yeah, it'll be at the Grand Summit again this year.
Okay, and real quick, mark the date, the Soldier Hollow Classic Sheepdog Festival coming up next month. Is this the first year off of Labor Day or the second?
This will be the first year. So last year, they actually took a pause and did not hold the event for the first time in over 20 years. So this will be the return of the Sheepdog Festival, but instead of it being over Labor Day weekend, it'll be over Memorial weekend, and this will be the first year they're moving those dates and holding it over Memorial. It will still be held at Soldier Hollow, so same venue, same wonderful experience. It actually will probably be better for the canines that'll be involved, because as we're all aware, Labor Day weekend can tend to have some really hot temperatures that are kind of lingering from the summer season. May, it's going to be interesting. It could be a mixed bag. We all know how May weather, Mother Nature can surprise us. So,
okay. Tickets will be.
Yeah, get your tickets for that. They are. They're available now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. On the Heber Valley website?
Yes. GoHeberValley.com on our website. Okay. Absolutely.
All right. And then also mark the date for June 10th. That's when the tickets for the Demolition Derby and Rodeo go online. And again, that's like that fast.
Oh, I'm telling you, if you aren't online when they go on sale June 10th, you're going to have a really hard time getting tickets, especially for the Demolition Derby and the Saturday night conclusion of the rodeo. It's a three-night rodeo, and this will be the second or third year they've extended and done three nights, so it'll be a Thursday, Friday, Saturday for the rodeo. But yeah, you'll want to get online June 10th to get those tickets for sure.
Okay. Jessica, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Jessica Turner with Heber Valley Chamber.